Hello, and welcome to Psych Ready, your go-to revision podcast for OCR GCSE psychology. I'm your tutor for today, and in this episode, we're diving deep into one of the most important and most frequently examined topics on the specification, ethics and research. Whether you're revising for your first mock or your final exam, this episode will give you everything you need to pick up marks with confidence. So grab your revision notes, get comfortable, and let's get started. Ethics in research is essentially the set of rules and guidelines that psychologists must follow to protect the people who take part in their studies. These guidelines are set by the British Psychological Society, or the BPS, and they exist because throughout history, some psychological research caused real harm to participants. Think about Milgram's obedience study in 1963, where participants were led to believe they were delivering electric shocks to another person, or Watson and Rayner's Little Albert study in 1920, where a baby was deliberately made to fear a white rat. These studies gave us fascinating insights into human behavior, but they also raised serious questions about how far researchers should go. The BPS guidelines are the answer to those questions. Now let's go through the six core BPS ethical guidelines one by one, because you absolutely need to know all six for your exam. The first is informed consent. This means that before a study begins, participants must be told what the research involves, its aims, procedures, and any risks, and they must agree to take part. Crucially, consent must be given freely, without pressure. If participants are under 16, a parent or guardian must provide consent on their behalf. In practice, researchers use a consent form that participants sign before the study starts. The key word here is informed. Simply asking someone to take part is not enough. They need to understand what they're agreeing to. The second guideline is deception. Deception means deliberately misleading participants about the true nature of the study. The BPS says researchers should avoid deception wherever possible. However, and this is really important for your exam, deception is not banned outright. Sometimes a study simply cannot work if participants know the true aim. In Milgram's study, for example, participants had to believe the shocks were real, otherwise the results would have been meaningless. When deception is used, it must be justified by the scientific value of the research, and it must always be followed by a full debrief. The third guideline is protection from harm. Researchers must ensure that participants are not exposed to any greater risk of physical or psychological harm than they would encounter in their everyday lives. Physical harm includes things like injury or pain. Psychological harm includes stress, anxiety, embarrassment, or lasting distress. This is a really important distinction. Examiners love to test whether you can tell the difference between physical and psychological harm. If a study involves an unsolvable puzzle task that causes frustration, that's psychological harm, not physical harm. Always be specific when you write about this in your exam. The fourth guideline is the right to withdraw. Participants must be told at the start of the study that they are free to leave at any time without giving a reason and without penalty. This means they can also withdraw their data after the study has ended. A key issue here is that researchers must not put pressure on participants to stay. In Milgram's study, the experimenter used prods like "please continue" and "you have no choice." This directly violated the right to withdraw. The fifth guideline is confidentiality. This means that any personal information collected during the study must be kept private and secure. Participants' data should not be shared with anyone outside the research team without their permission. A common way to protect confidentiality is to store data securely and to ensure that individual participants cannot be identified from the published results. Now, here's a really common mistake that examiners see all the time, so listen carefully. Confidentiality is not the same as anonymity, and it's not the same as privacy. Anonymity means that participants' identities are not recorded at all, for example, by assigning each participant a number instead of using their name. Privacy is the right of individuals not to be observed or have their personal information collected without their knowledge. Confidentiality is about protecting the data that has already been collected. These are three distinct concepts, and mixing them up will cost you marks. The sixth and final guideline is privacy. Researchers must respect participants' right to privacy. This means they should not observe or record people in private settings without their knowledge and consent. A public place, like a shopping center, is generally considered acceptable for observation without consent. But a private setting, like someone's home or a changing room, would be a clear violation of privacy. So to summarize the six guidelines, informed consent, deception, protection from harm, right to withdraw, confidentiality, and privacy. Use the mnemonic "I do protect rights" confidently and privately. Or even better, think of it as "I do care, really, consent, and privacy to help you remember all six. Now let's talk about how to deal with ethical issues, because this is where a lot of marks are available in the exam and where a lot of candidates go wrong. When a study uses deception, the standard solution is a debrief. A debrief is a session at the end of the study where the researcher reveals the true aims, explains why deception was necessary, and checks that participants are not distressed. A good debrief should leave participants feeling no worse than when they arrived. In your exam, don't just say, debrief the participants. Say, conduct a full debrief to explain the true aim of the study and to check for any psychological distress caused by the deception. When prior informed consent is impossible, for example, in a covert observation in a public place or a field experiment where telling participants would ruin the study, researchers can use presumptive consent. This involves asking a similar group of people whether they would have objected to taking part in the study. If the majority say they would not have minded, the researcher presumes that the actual participants would also have consented. Another option is retrospective consent, where participants are asked for consent after the study has taken place. To protect anonymity, researchers assign each participant a number or code instead of recording their name. This means that even if the data were seen by someone outside the research team, individual participants could not be identified. To protect participants' right to withdraw, researchers include a clear statement in the standardized instructions at the start of the study, telling participants they are free to leave at any time without penalty. This is a procedural detail that examiners specifically look for in design questions. Now let's move on to exam tips and common mistakes. This section could be the difference between a grade 5 and a grade 7. Tip number 1. Always contextualize your answers. Do not write, participants might be harmed. Write, participants might experience psychological harm, specifically anxiety and stress, caused by the unsolvable puzzle task used in this study. Examiners award marks for linking the ethical issue to the specific stimulus material in the question. Generic answers get generic marks, which means low marks. Tip number 2. Know the difference between identifying an issue and dealing with it. If the question asks you to explain how the researcher could deal with the ethical issue of deception, you must describe a concrete action, not just define deception. Say the researcher should conduct a full debrief at the end of the study, revealing the true aim and checking that participants are not distressed. That's a dealing with answer. Simply saying deception involves misleading participants is an identification answer and it won't get full marks. Tip number 3. In 13-mark design a study questions, you must include a dedicated paragraph on ethical considerations to reach the top band. Examiners are specifically looking for this. Mention at least 2 ethical guidelines by name, explain how they apply to your specific design, and describe the procedural steps you would take to address them. Tip number 4. Remember that deception is not banned. It just requires strong justification and a mandatory debrief. Candidates who write deception is not allowed will lose marks. The correct answer is that deception should be avoided where possible, but when it is necessary for the scientific value of the study, it must be justified and followed by a thorough debrief. Tip number 5. Use the BPS guidelines by name. Don't just say, I would protect participants. Say, I would uphold the BPS guideline of protection from harm by ensuring that the noise stimulus used in the study does not exceed levels that could cause lasting distress. Now let's do a quick fire recall quiz. I'll ask a question, give you a few seconds to think, and then give you the answer. Ready? Question 1. What does the BPS stand for? The British Psychological Society? Question 2. Name the 6 BPS ethical guidelines. Informed consent, deception, protection from harm, right to withdraw, confidentiality, and privacy. Question 3. What is the difference between confidentiality and anonymity? Confidentiality means keeping collected data private and secure. Anonymity means participants' identities are never recorded, for example, by using participant numbers instead of names. Question 4. What is presumptive consent and when is it used? Presumptive consent involves asking a similar group of people whether they would have objected to taking part. It is used when prior informed consent would invalidate the study, for example, in covert field experiments. Question 5. In Milgram's 1963 obedience study, which 2 BPS guidelines were most clearly violated? Deception, participants were told they were delivering real electric shocks, and the right to withdraw, participants were pressured to continue with prods like, you have no choice. Question 6. What must always follow the use of deception in a study? A full debrief. How did you do? If you got all 6, brilliant, you're in great shape. If you missed any, go back and review those sections before your exam. Let's wrap up with a quick summary of everything we've covered today. The BPS sets 6 core ethical guidelines for psychological research: informed consent, deception, protection from harm, right to withdraw, confidentiality, and privacy. Each guideline exists to protect participants from harm and to maintain public trust in psychological research. When ethical issues arise, researchers have specific tools to address them: debriefs for deception, presumptive or retrospective consent when prior consent is impossible, participant numbers for anonymity, and clear withdrawal statements and standardized instructions. In your exam, always contextualize your answers to the specific study in the question, distinguish between identifying an issue and dealing with it, and in design questions, dedicate a full paragraph to ethics to secure top band marks. Remember, ethics isn't just a box-ticking exercise in psychology. It's the foundation that makes research trustworthy, replicable, and humane. Examiners want to see that you understand not just what the guidelines are, but why they matter and how to apply them in real research scenarios. That's it for today's episode of Psych Ready. Good luck with your revision, and remember, every mark counts. See you next time.